In the verses that we're going to be reading this morning, Prabhupada explicitly states what he's been implicitly stating or indirectly stating throughout this whole chapter. There are two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky and thereby getting emancipation from all material bondage. Namely, the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God or the gradual process through the other higher planets of the universe are set forth exactly according to the version of the Vedas. So we're accustomed to being educated and trained in the direct process. So when we hear these other things going past this planet, entering that planet, going on to another planet, it's not what we're accustomed to hearing, and it's a little complicated. It is a little complicated because it's not direct. The preferred of the two is the direct. This indirect or circuitous path is there because it's a valid path, and the saintly kings understood that path and were proficient in that path as well as the devotional path, and so it's being described. It's Vedic, according to the Vedic version the Bhagavatam is describing. Whether it's from the category of column A or column B, purity is required. And just so that we don't have a confusion or any uncertainty about what that is, what purity is, these verses spell it out. So it's very nice verses. Text 31. Only the purified souls can attain the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction in his constitutional position. So it's part of the refrain that this is self-realization. Self-realization isn't so many other things. In the universities, they teach self-actualization. In inspirational speakers, they speak about the same thing. And pseudo-spiritualists, and there's so many anomalies that go under the banner of self-realization. Here's the authoritative understanding from Srimad Bhagavatam. And as Prabhupada is going to point out, it's collaborated in other parts of the Vedas. So it's, what is that self-realization? It's a state of pure consciousness wherein one is face-to-face in a direct relationship with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and complete satisfaction in our constitutional state. And what is that constitutional state? The theme. Accepting happily the position of being the constitutional servant. It's who I am. The constitutional position means it's who we really are. Who we really are is we're servants of Krishna. And to be in that service relationship with Krishna, completely satisfied. No other attraction. Not wanting anything else. That's self-realization. There may be things that lead up to that, and some people have the idea that that's what self-realization is. it's something like, you know, having a little ray of light and thinking, oh, that's the sun. The little ray or little shred, little fiber of truth is also truth. And some persons that have a little fiber of truth, that's it, that's their religion. But it's not the whole picture. And therefore, what Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the purport is from the verse, Etam Gatim Bhagavatim Gato Yaha. So, to that person who has reached Bhagavan, Bhagavatim Gato Yaha. That's not Brahman realization. Those, so a little thread or fiber of the truth, a partial realization of the absolute truth, is there is this realm of Brahman, and we are part of that realm of Brahman, or Aham Brahmasmi. But that's not Bhagavan realization. It's not the complete picture. The purified state of consciousness, or the full state of self-realization, is to realize our relationship with Krishna, or to re-establish, restore, to always be acting in the consciousness of our relationship with Krishna. Always. That's pure consciousness. That's self-realization. And whoever is able to renovate such devotional perfection is never again attracted by this material world, and he never returns. That's a relief. So this is the stage where there's no attraction, but we're not there yet. So there's a progression. And in this mechanical system, there's the going past but not entering into the various realms of higher existence. And just keep going. It's the stairway method, or the gradual method, or incremental method. And so there's a long purport where Prabhupada, first he contrasts merging into the rays of Brahman as those who wish to do that may do that, but then the aspiration to merge into the Brahma Jyoti does not awaken the loving attraction for Krishna, or the propensity to serve Krishna. Not here, but elsewhere, Prabhupada likens this to overcoming the force of gravity by rocket fuel in the spacecraft. Takes off and overcomes the force of gravity and goes flying around in space. How long can you fly around in space? Till you want to come back and do something besides flying around in space. Because we're active by nature, and we're social by nature. We want friendship. We want loving exchanges. We want activity. How long can you float around in space? After some time, the nature of the constitutional position of the soul, which has been temporarily suspended by that merging into the Brahma Jyoti, one wants to do something. Not just exist. And since that knowledge of service to the Supreme hasn't been awakened, one has to come back again. The rocket ship, when it runs out of oxygen and water and fuel, person has to come back. Prabhupada explains, unless they can land on some other place and that other place can sustain their life, they must come back after some time. Very simple. So same. This merging in the Brahma-jyoti aspiration, even if it can be attained, it doesn't endure. And for that matter, it's another in the category of selfish desire. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi kami, sakale ashanta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, those who are desiring sense gratification. Well, that's agitation of the mind. Supposing one wants liberation, it's still a selfish I want for myself position. And so the mind also becomes restless. Even if one achieves it, the mind is still restless because your constitutional position isn't achieved. And siddhi kami, as long as there's a desire for these mystic perfections, and the yogi that travels this trajectory, he experiences those realms. And if he's attracted to those mystic siddhis, then he'll stop his journey. So it requires being purified of those taking shelter of other desires instead of the desire of our relationship with Krishna. So the direct method is, just get hit over the head with it again and again. Just to serve Krishna. Awaken your love for Krishna. And this other is restraint, withdrawing the senses from those things, subduing the desires. So, as this verse is saying, those who would achieve that state that's unlimitedly blissful, unlimitedly satisfying, no agitation of other desires, there's only one desire, to serve the Supreme Lord. One who achieves that consciousness achieves Vaikuntha. And having gone to that spiritual abode of the Lord, one never comes back again. And Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 8:15. The great Mahatmas or Bhakti Yogis, after attaining my association, never come back to this material world, which is full of miseries and is impermanent. So there's just this, in Nectar of Devotion, you find this statement by Rupa Goswami that initially doesn't sound so nice, but it's, you think, consider it carefully, it's very clear. Love for God is exclusive. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. It's very focused and singular. Love goes to Krishna. Now, there's a good fortune in, there's many good fortunes in placing your propensity upon Krishna, and one of them is that because all existences emanate from Krishna, one also has love for all existences. But if you try to love all existences, you cannot do that because we're tiny and limited and we don't have the capacity. One time when Mataji asked Srila Prabhupada, when chanting Hare Krishna mantra, Srila Prabhupada, should we think about the welfare of all living entities? And Prabhupada's reply was, you don't have the capacity to think of all living entities. What to speak of the welfare of all living entities? Just think of Krishna. And automatically, feelings of compassion for all living entities will awaken in your heart, because all living entities are part of Krishna. So it's exclusive, at the same time all-inclusive, because Krishna is the center. Krishna is the fountainhead or summum bonum or source. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate matak parataram nanyat. Krishna is the source of everything. Love is exclusive. Love for Krishna is exclusive and simultaneously all-inclusive. But it's exclusive. Therefore, Anya Devata is not a place where a devotee reposes worship or service or such tendencies. It's not neglecting or ignoring them, but it's honoring that whatever it is that they have is given to them by Krishna, just as with us, whatever we have is given to us by Krishna. Krishna is the worshipable supreme. Then a whole page is dedicated to explaining the two words Shantam and Anandam. That's the reward, or that's what the experience of the bhakta is. Shantam and Anandam. So we've discussed the Shantam. There is no shanti, or there's no peace, if one's mind is agitated by desires for sense gratification, liberation, or mystic power. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Mind is agitated. But important is, in the position of pure devotion, that this position of purity, again, I'll read the language, having attained the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction in his constitutional state. Very, very powerful. Not only practicing serving Krishna in constitutional condition, but making the connection, completely satisfied, completely peaceful. So when one is in that condition, shanti, because the other things are ashanti, or they agitate and disturb. I was having a conversation the other day with one devotee who was saying, Maharaj, I'm always disturbed. I'm chanting, but I'm always disturbed. So I narrated a little visual experience, and some of you may appreciate this. When you are, whatever your position is, even in other forms of life, if you're feeling sheltered and protected, then you can be peaceful. I gave the example that I like to go for morning walks, and so one morning on the IIT campus, before everybody gets up, I get a chance to go around, and it's very quiet. So it seems that they've removed all the stray dogs from the campus, but there used to be like packs of dogs. Maybe one of them bit somebody and they said, just remove them all or something. But there were, Dr. Saren knows, whole like group right near where we were staying. Anyway, so it's go and walk around and walk around, and dogs are very territorial. Another dog comes into their territory. What do the dogs do? Right? So one professor one morning was walking his little white French poodle, cute little dog, you know, shaved here and tufts here and there and on a long leash. And the professor was walking along with the dog on his leash. The pack of dogs saw him. They looked at each other. And so the professor picked up his dog in one hand and showed the other dogs his stick with the other hand. Big, long stick. They looked at each other, looked at the stick, looked at each other, looked at the stick, shrugged their shoulders and went and lied down. A little French poodle's wagging his tail, licking the professor's chin, happy as can be, because he's sanata, he has a master. And the stray dogs, anata, they have no master. So the little French poodle, he could have been a meal for those big guys, because they're used to, you know, tearing at each other. They've got all these sores and marks all over their body from so many dog fights they've been in. They know how to do it. Little French poodle, he would have been a meal. But because he had master, he was fearless. Just happy as can be. Peaceful. Not disturbed. I mean, there was cause for disturbance, but he was protected, and so he could be very peaceful. When one is in one's when one is in one's constitutional position, that is serving Krishna, willfully, consciously choosing to serve Krishna, I want to serve Krishna, and doing with priti purvakam, with genuine feelings of affection, one feels completely safe, completely contented, shantam and anandambam. That's not available by any other shelter. And therefore, there are these stages that we find for a person on the path of spiritual life, and I'll just outline them. It's the first instruction, practically the first instruction that Krishna gives to Arjuna, is when you see this duality that's out there, like things that intimidate or threaten you, you tolerate them, like any form of duality. Matra sparshas to kontaya sitoshna sukha dukada agama payon nityas tongues titiksha svabharata. You tolerate it. And that means you withdraw your consciousness from duality, but then you have to place your consciousness in eternality or upon the soul, on the eternal platform. So the initial phase is you put up with it. Like Prabhupada's language is, you make the best use of a bad bargain. I wanted happiness and I got misery. Now I have this body, what am I going to do? You tolerate it. I've done so many sinful things, I deserve so much botheration. I'll just tolerate it. And then invest my consciousness in the path of transcendence. And when one experiences the path of transcendence, then the duality is there and the spirituality is there, and I choose the spirituality and just tolerate the other one. But eventually, by investing consciousness in spiritual practice, this other attraction goes down. Now, the verse that we read last night was, however, the process of spiritual practice may also nurture the weeds of impure desires in the heart, and weeds grow fast. They grow faster than the other plants that you want, and they just take all the sunlight and all the water, and there goes your garden. So you have to remove the weeds. So that's beyond tolerating, is you remove no sense gratification, no allure for becoming one with the Supreme, no to the appeal of mystic cities, no to the idea of becoming respected by others as a religious person. Labha, puja, and pratishta. There's the gardening of the heart. First stage is tolerance. You just put up with it. Then you garden the heart. It's anarta nivritti. You remove those things that don't belong there. The next stage is those things may be there and you're just indifferent to them. It's like the nishtha stage, where nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. They still are there in trace amounts, but they're not going to act because the bhakti is so strong, just overpowers those influences. And the final stage, or a stage that follows that, is a stage where there's such happiness in devotion, these other things become insignificant. That's purity. Meaningless. What's the meaning of the light of a glowworm at noon? The light of a glowworm is insignificant. In darkness it may appear to be something, but in the full light of the day, insignificant. Insignificant. Meaningless. One doesn't give attention to the meaningless things of this world. One may feel compassion that persons are absorbed in meaningless things, and those meaningless things are actually hurtful to their well-being and hurtful to the well-being of others. And the whole show is going on in a very hurtful, harmful, painful, suffering way, needlessly. That's really unfortunate. But I'm not attracted to any of that. So that's the state of purity that's being described. Prabhupada writes, one can attain the stage of love of God by pure devotional service, or, in quotes, by a learned love of labor. Excuse me. Learned labor of love. There's this phrase, labor of love. Like the father will go to the office and work very hard to maintain his family out of the labor of love. The mother will look after the child. Even the child is making messes and making noise and disobedient and carrying on in so many ways. The mother very lovingly continues to labor with her child because it's a labor of love. This is a learned labor of love, where one understands this is the ultimate repose of that tendency to labor in a loving manner unto the supreme cause of all causes. So one just takes that tendency and directs it and reposes it upon Krishna. We don't have to lobotomize ourselves or become desireless in the material sense of abnegation. Nor do we have to go with our empty hands before Krishna and say, I'm serving you, can you please give me this, that, that, this and that. We don't need to do that. And the devotee is free from such a propensity. They only want one thing, that loving service, the learned labor of love. Such purity can be achieved in that way. And when one has that qualification in earnest and sincerity, one can come before the Supreme Lord and experience the fullness of that relationship. And there's nothing more to be wanted. And Prabhupada writes a final paragraph and says it again to be more clear. It just says the same thing again. There are these gradual stages, and one should, we may be at stage A, B, C, or D, whatever their stage is. That's not the critical. Where you are in your trajectory of spiritual life is not the critical question to ask. The question to ask is, are you clear what is the goal? And are you striving to reach the goal? Even you may be taking little baby steps. Are you clear what is the goal? And are you striving for the goal? And are you doing so under the careful guidance of Krishna's representatives? Those are the questions to ask. Then one can be assured of reaching the goal. One who strives by right means, Krishna says. Intelligence should guide your endeavors. And the intelligence should be Krishna's intelligence. The intelligent person recognizes, my intelligence is limited. I need superior intelligence. That's intelligent. And where do I get the superior intelligence? From Krishna. Oh, but Krishna is so far away. But Krishna sends his representatives. Oh, I should take intelligence from Krishna's representatives. That's my intelligence. Then my endeavors can be guided. He who strives by right means, that purity can be reached. Shukadeva Goswami continues, Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, know that all I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. So he's winding down the chapter. The question was, what's the duty of people in general? So he's given it. And now he's saying it's not just my idea. This is the conclusion of the Vedas. I've just summarized it for you very concisely. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad twice. And the essence of that message is those who are free from all material desires, which are diseases of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter the kingdom of God through the archiplanets. The archiplanets. Here we go again. This indirect stuff. So then, there's two ways. Elevator and stairway. So this is describing the stairway. There are two different approaches of going back to Godhead. So our recommended method is the direct approach. But this other is a bona fide process, and so it's outlined. The direct approach needs to be understood. They both need to be understood by disciplic succession. And Then Prabhupada writes, that is the way of knowing the knowledge contained in the Vedas. It is not a thing to be understood by one's erudite scholarship or by the fashionable interpretations of mundane scholars. There is nothing to be added, nothing to be subtracted, because the truth is the truth. One has to, after all, accept some authority. Even those that say they don't want to accept authority, accept authority. It's called the mind. There was one very learned person from India who was going around all over Europe and America teaching that you don't need a teacher. And Prabhupada's comment was, then why are you speaking? He's saying to accept me as a teacher. But that's implicit. Explicit is you don't need a teacher. So he's giving a teaching. One has to accept some authority. Accept me. So the scientist is exploring the dimensions of the universe by inference and by extending the senses in various ways because they want to know. But this knowledge cannot be fully and properly understood by that method. That's the message of the Bhagavatam.